this has been a fairly large effort to try and develop some of these causal models to assist SPFSIG states in their efforts to address particular ATOD issues. Now, methamphetamine is, as I'm sure many of you know, a drug of considerable interest around the country. And certainly within the SPFSIG process, what states were asked to do initially was to look across alcohol, tobacco, and illicit drugs and say, what are our priority problems? Well, not surprisingly, there were several states where folks thought that they were going to have to work on meth because there was such a strong push in their states to say, it's meth, it's meth, it's meth, that there was an expectation that a whole lot of SPFSIG states would end up working on meth. Interestingly enough, that has not turned out to be the case. And I think that there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, meth is still fairly specific. It is not an issue that is across the country. There are certain places that really have not been affected by meth much at all. There are other places that certainly the impact has been much greater, but it's not a drug that is sort of across the country like alcohol or tobacco, number one. Number two, I think as people started to actually look at some of the data, they were surprised at what they learned. So for example, if folks were here on Monday, there was a presentation from somebody from Indiana who said, Indiana, that was going to be the drug. That's what everybody was going to work on. And when they started to look at the data across alcohol, tobacco, and illicit drugs, they began to kind of learn some things. And interestingly enough, in Indiana, even though that was a huge political issue, use of methamphetamines is lower than use of cocaine. That has been an ongoing problem for years in Indiana. And sort of looking at the data allowed them to kind of see that, present that, and begin to discuss it. So it's been an interesting process, how to deal with meth. That's not to say that methamphetamine is not an issue. And so in this project, we were really interested, okay, can we take an illicit drug and try to figure out sort of a community systems model for addressing it? Now, there's a lot less literature out there available, and there's some complications in doing this. So we very strongly were trying to use our general causal model that you see up here to try to frame our thinking and see where we go. I'm going to do this a little differently than Beth. I'm going to show you the model. I'm going to briefly talk about it. And then I'm mostly going to talk about some of the complications in trying to figure out how things work in this model. So that's going to be the approach here. So, oh, I thought I got rid of all these, but apparently that's not the case. You know, if I were really doing this, I would have gone, oh, no, that's bad. Oh, good. That's a good thing. Okay, so we tried to put together a model to address methamphetamine, and we were making some assumptions. We were making the assumption that, you know, there were some similarities in these intervening variables that we could identify. We were making some assumptions that this model worked in kind of the same kind of their supply factors, like price, supply for purses, production, some of the enforcement things that would work on the supply side. That's kind of the bottom part of this model. And then there were probably some things that were driving demand. That's the top part of the model. I am not going to go through this whole model. There are copies up there if you're interested in looking at it. I want to make a couple of points. I mean, just some of the things that, you know, when we think about methamphetamine and we were trying to put together a model, a couple of things that we thought about. For example, you know, we put in this variable called supply available for purchase, and it may not even be for purchase. It might be for social exchange. We put that in because at least in the meth, in what's been happening around methamphetamine in many places, as many of you know, much of the production and actual supply was coming from local labs. And so people were getting it from particular places, either for purchase or just for social exchange. There's a huge amount of social exchange in the meth issue, which is probably not well represented yet on our model. This is very much in progress. But we were trying to acknowledge that you know, supply really seemed to be driving some of meth use across the country in different places, and we were very interested in how that looked. Now, one of the things, and I'll mention this later, you know, supply's changing across the country. There's been a huge effort to cut back on precursors. There's been a huge effort to reduce local labs. And so the supply in many places is now shifting to Mexican imports and other things. So we see these changes in this model. But again, trying to figure out how to capture it on a model is something interesting. Just one other intervening variable I'm going to highlight again. We put in something called community concern about meth harm. Now, I think that that's true in an alcohol or a tobacco model. I think we wanted to highlight it in this meth model because we were sort of fascinated by what was going on, what we were hearing about meth. You know, incredible, huge problem, biggest thing. All the money needs to go to it in some places. And there was just a large amount of community concern about meth. We're all kind of, and that was influencing community norms, and it was influencing sort of what the police were doing, et cetera. And so we think it's a really critical factor to sort of put into one of these models. How much does community care, and how does that then direct kind of what goes on to address some of these issues? I think perhaps there should be an arrow from community concern about meth backward to use and harms, because it might actually be affecting those in some particular ways. If concern is high, perhaps there's more of an effort to do things to try to reduce it, which might in fact reduce use, etc. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that we were thinking about as we were trying to build this model. But I want to go on and actually just talk more about kind of some similarities and then some of the challenges of building the model. You know, similarities, as I mentioned, I mean, I think we believe that an illicit drug model should follow a similar supply-demand system for product development, distribution, and use. We believe it has to be a complex system of intervening variables influencing use and harm. And we think that there probably are some key intervening variables where it's a product like alcohol and tobacco. And we assume that there are some, we can come up with some similar intervening variables that we might be able to address. Those seem kind of obvious, I would hope, but we at least started from there. But there are a lot of special issues around methamphetamine that certainly challenged us and are limiting us, I would say, in some of our ability to really articulate a very clear model at this point. First of all, there's a much smaller literature, research literature on illicit drugs, and what there is out there mostly deals with cocaine, marijuana, and heroin, but it's small. Secondly, to state the obvious, it's illicit. And so it's running through a market that is very different than a legal market. This does seem to sort of result in some additional complexities about relationships between variables. As we read the literature, and as Beth said, it sort of extends into a whole other set of literature, criminal justice, economics, et cetera. There are a lot of counterintuitive findings on some variables that kind of surprise you and you say, huh, what's going on here? And then lastly, there are just real challenges in studying these systems because there are illegal markets and illegal use. And so not only do people not want to talk about how they're buying and selling things, they certainly don't want to talk about how they're using things. So there are just some complications in trying to study and develop models around this. So I just wanted to mention briefly some of the complexities that we've sort of found and discover as we've been trying to develop these models, and I'm going to highlight a few. The first one really focuses on kind of this issue of supply and use. You know, we were positing a direct positive relationship between supply, availability, and meth use. However, when we looked into the research, and there's a research on some spatial relationships, we found positive associations for adults and youth between sales in surrounding areas and self-reported drug use, but negative associations among adults and no association among youth between sales in residents' immediate neighborhood and use. So sort of looking at the literature, areas of greatest access aren't necessarily areas of greatest use. Maybe that's true in alcohol and tobacco, and we just didn't really look into it, but it seems to be very clear in looking at this meth field and some of the illicit drugs that it's kind of an intriguing thing. Use and access aren't necessarily occurring in the same space. Another complexity, supply and price. Again, economic theory posits when supply decreases, price increases. Well, illicit drugs aren't sold in standard retail markets. And so the extent to which supply restrictions seem to lead to price increases depends on different factors. A couple of them, you know, first of all, it's very clear that it depends on where in the supply hierarchy you pull drugs out, how that will affect price. So replacements cross closer to production. I mean, getting poppies in Afghanistan is going to be have less of an effect on retail price than if you get them closer to the retail level. How prices are transmitted across levels seems to be a complicating factor that you need to look at carefully when you're trying to figure out the relationship between supply and price. And from looking across the literature, you know, what you learn is that most drugs that are seized come from these high-level seizures rather than being close to the level of sale and use, and thus have less impact on price. I'm going to get in and make a couple points about strategies, some counterintuitive findings about strategies, and I'm focusing on enforcement here for the next three slides, and that's all I'm going to go in on. You know, again, assuming, we assumed that increasing enforcement would raise costs to drug suppliers and dealers and thus reduce the quantity offered for sale and drive up price. Interestingly enough, though, if you look over the past couple of decades in the cocaine heroin field, actual enforcement has been significantly increasing, but price has been decreasing. We also find that increased enforcement in these different studies sometimes led to no change in price, sometimes led to price increases, and sometimes led to price decreases. And you couldn't always, folks really didn't always know why or what was going on. Again, I think not necessarily because the principles don't work the same, but some of this is about these illicit markets that are incredibly difficult to study and understand is a piece of this. Another counterintuitive finding, increased enforcement might not yield the expected results for a whole series of things. I mentioned already these changing conditions of production. So in the meth epidemic, situation, I don't really believe it's an epidemic, to make that clear, but with what's going on with methamphetamine, you know, there have been changing conditions of production and supply, and that's definitely going to affect use. The relatively cheap replacement costs for drugs that get seized up at the higher levels of the system. Drug traffickers seem to have quite a lot of ability to adapt and adjust to different enforcement strategies. And another interesting overlap to Beth's work on violence, the role of violence in drug selling is really quite fascinating and has some influence. But you know, one of the findings here is that removing violent dealers reduces the removing the most violent dealers reduces the marginal cost of entry into the market for other dealers, but it might result in an increase in dealers entering in and thus lower prices. You take out the really violent people, other people come on in because the market is safer and it's not as bad place to be. So kind of interesting, counterintuitive, something, maybe not counterintuitive, but something you might not really expect. And then just to follow another example of counterintuitive, harsher penalties for drug offenses, you know, again, conventional enforcement imposes costs on dealers. But what's going on in the country around zero tolerance or mandatory minimum that impose really severe consequences, this says may stimulate drug consumption. I don't know if that's exactly true, but what we can see is that imposing these extremely severe consequences may in fact not produce reductions in drug use. So the opposite is not the case. And it is conceivable, and there's certainly folks out there writing about this, that sentencing more dealers to standard prison terms might be more effective in the long term than sentencing fewer dealers to longer mandatory terms. And lastly, just to make a couple of points, because again, we're trying to build these models to then say, okay, what's relevant in terms of intervention? I'm only talking about enforcement right now, which may or may not be of great interest to all prevention folks, but is an incredibly critical piece of these illicit drug markets. You know, it does seem to be very important to distinguish between higher level actions, to distinguish between levels of the market, higher level to local efforts. Higher levels of enforcement seem to be unlikely to produce long-term effects in local markets, although we can see that local enforcement efforts can absolutely shift markets and change where they are, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It does appear, though, that without other resources, that drug sales tend to pick up after kind of local efforts to shift markets. Once police resources get removed, you can often see that drug sales and come back into neighborhoods. And thus, you know, I think we can all conclude in a very simplistic way that enforcement should only be one part of comprehensive approaches to prevention rather than an exclusive one. And while it's critical to give teeth to all of our laws, if we're only thinking about enforcement in some of these areas, it's obviously producing somewhat mixed results. So that was just sort of trying to focus a little bit on kind of the enforcement and trying to look at these models and figure out what actually happens when we try to apply some of our learnings from alcohol and tobacco to something in illicit drug field. The models work a little bit differently due to the illicit nature of the drugs, and there's a lot of interesting work that I could think could be done. I just wanted to conclude, though, by saying that, interestingly enough, in the SPIF-SIG effort, which is an effort to try to help states and communities work on some of these things, even though our research and our sort of look at the meth is, A, very preliminary, B, there is a lot of uncertainty around the research, C, there's a lot of uncertainty about what to do. It's been really helpful to folks just to have laid out some sort of visual, a model, to sort of say, huh, okay, I can see how pieces fit together, and then to sit down and try and figure out within their community about specifically what's going on. So sort of as Michael mentioned and Rodney mentioned, just having this framework to folks to sort of respond and react to has actually been a positive thing, because up until now, in many cases, with many of the people that we work with, the conversation about meth has been highly politicized, not a lot of knowledge infused in it, and so can go off in all kinds of crazy areas. So again, I think that this kind of effort to at least just put a framework on things and a way to help people think about it has actually been very positive, even with all of the limitations of what we know and kind of can do to kind of help people. So that is the end of our session, and